Game on 2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks to Jenny Green for getting us to the very last Friday in January. And it's hard to believe. This is Game On, though.
We made it. Coming up today, World Cup winner BJ Botha talks Pro 14, Six Nations, and gives us the South African view on the Lions tour this year.
And Willie John McBride said loyalty. You can't buy it. You can't even ask for it. Well, Paul O'Connell gave it, and he got it too. A salvage test win from a series that many will say should have been theirs, but today it's certainly theirs. This is some achievement at the home of the world champions. The Lions had to act like world champions to rescue this one. A team to be proud of in defeat last week, and a team to be proud of in victory this week.
Alan Colley and David Connolly are standing by as the Premier League continues and Liverpool get back scoring goals.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. It was necessary as well, to be honest. It was a good moment to show a little bit up. And we are still here, so that's good to know. And so now we go home anyway and come back in a few hours to play West Ham.
Klopp's back smiling, everything's good in the world. Plus, she's already got her Cheltenham Advent calendar on the wall. It's Jane Mangan on Racing.
Game on 2FM.
If you want to get in touch, you can do so by texting us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. There might not be any Gaelic Games action, but there is plenty of news as always. And this evening's breaking news is that Paul Flynn, former Dublin footballer, has stepped down from his role as Chief Executive Officer with the Gaelic Players Association. I think it was quite a shock because he's only taken over in 2018. They've had quite a few chief executives since Desi Farrell left in 2016. Dermot Earley was there as well, and then they had an interim CEO for a little while too. So it's interesting times for the GPA. There is a lot going to happen for them in this upcoming year. There is the merger with the women's GPA, and they also have to negotiate their charter for expenses. So it'll be a difficult job, no doubt, for somebody to take that over right now with everything that's going on and just uncertain times. And I think for the GPA, they could probably do with a little bit of consistency.
And a really important job as well, Marie. I think, you know, just from any player or any person involved in the sport, to have an organised body to be your voice is very important. So, look, I think... you know, Paul has probably done his run in it, and it could be I'm just chatting about me personally, but I think I just look at the people that are involved in our player groups. It is non-stop. It is it's on the phone constantly, and you're not only a mentor, you're an agony aunt, you're trying to sort everything out.
So. And Donica, can you imagine as well, like it's not just a group of professional players, it's 32 counties, amateur players. There's huge amount of players groups, huge amount of people to have to deal with. So I can imagine, as you said, how demanding it is. Mm. And I noticed a little bit earlier that Ciarán Maguín is running this evening in the World Indoor Tour in Germany, and it's going to be on the BBC and also on YouTube. But the person that tweeted it that I saw was Andrew Cotter, the guy that we had on about, God, it must be nearly a year ago when he did the commentary on his dogs. And he was so excited. He was like, we have an actual sport event and I'm going to be commentating on it. So.
Oh, wow. Well, hopefully she goes well. She's in the 1500 and it'd be great to see her get off. We've heard her speaking so emotionally this week about her coach Gerry Kiernan, and just to see her being able to quote and put in a big performance would be great. A bit like watching Katie last night. It is so uplifting to watch an Irish singlet going out, isn't it? An Irish jersey. I'm really looking forward to the Six Nations. It just gives you a bit of pride.
Yeah, we'll be chatting about that later on. But something else caught my eye today, Donica, that I wanted to chat to you about it, and it is surrounding the Munster team, because so often on the show we've been talking about brothers, and there's loads of them. Yeah, there is. So there's Rory and Niall Scannell, then there's Josh and Fineen Witcherly, and then Liam Coombs and Gavin are cousins.
Cousins, yeah. That's a dangerous team to play against. If you throw a punch one of those guys, you're in big trouble, you know. But look, I think from a Munster point of view, this is beautiful. It's a brilliant thing to see. People want to, of course, we need marquee signings. The way rugby has gone, you have to have, and we definitely have them now with the Landes and stuff like that. But homegrown talent coming through like that. Now, it's going to be a tough game, and there's an awful lot of changes. We'll go through it later with World Cup winner BJ Botha, but I'm with you, Marie. There is something special about talking out with brothers, and it always brings a little added something to a team, you know.
It becomes even more tribal, I'd say, because you're just so connected and so close, and you've probably grown up, you know, fighting each other's battles and being so close. I've played with my sisters many times through the years, and it was just such a brilliant experience to be on the pitch with them, and, you know, to have parents on the sideline. It's obviously difficult for the parents now that they won't be at all, you know, at games now, but just
right,
brilliant.
It is. I was lucky enough to play with my older brother, Ulton, and I remember I used to be far braver. I was cheeky. You know what I mean? I was there. I not only am I covered, look at him. He'll go to the wall for me. So.
That's so true, because my sister was a centre-back and I was a midfielder, and I used to always think, oh, you know, the loose ball, she's going to pick it up, it'll be fine. And also I knew she wouldn't give out to me as much, well, not till we got home.
If I ever saw him going off, I was there, oh no, I've been at that tight head all day and now I'm on my own.
We'll go through that a little bit later, but I just wanted to highlight it because I think it's great.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to chatting rugby. There was one confirmed case in the Leinster camp of a Leinster player testing positive for COVID-19 outside of the provincial own regular PCR arrangement. So this is, obviously you wish, like we always do, the player the best of luck, but things like this worry me this time of the year, Marie, just how fragile the whole Irish system is and how reliant we are, not only on Leinster, but just on everyone, just, you know, getting the protocols right. One, you know, one little thing could really shake on to, you know, a camp and affect a bubble.
Yeah, and the thing about it as well is it's going on so long now, and we've been in and out of so many lockdowns that it's really hard for players to be in bubbles all the time as well, because, you know, you have to live your life a little bit too, and when you're in that environment constantly and that pressure, it just must be difficult.
I spoke to an awful lot of them, and Christmas was hell for them. They basically isolated from everyone because there was such big games coming up. There was meant to be two massive European Cup games. So they were like, it's worth 5 points. You know, it's massive responsibility not to, you know, conduct yourself in the best way. And then you just, those games got cancelled and you're there, oh God, love them. So,
any lads that did actually, you know, have that extra dessert are probably thrilled with themselves.
It's staying the course, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a quick break because I think it's quite... an adequate amount of time has passed for us to start talking about Liverpool, so...
Oh, there you go.
I've been very reserved. Well, Alan Cawley and David Connolly are standing by and they'll be with us after these.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Healthy snacking made easy with Green Fern's high protein on the go range. Available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
On 2FM. Welcome back. Well, it is time to talk football. I'm delighted to say we are joined by David Connolly and Alan Cawley. Alan, I'm going to go to you first because I haven't talked to you in a while and I'm just wondering how everything's going.
I'm good, Marie. I'm good. You know me.
It's been up and down.
No, I'm good. I'm good. The last time we spoke, we were, well, I wasn't, but you were all writing off Liverpool, but I think I was the only one that said I wouldn't be writing them off just yet. And it's been proven from the game last night that I still wouldn't be writing them off. They were very good.
Is it fair to say they're back?
I thought they were back, yeah. I actually got an indication in the cup game on Sunday. I thought they played well against Man United and they had a bit of zest and energy back about them that we normally associate with them from last year. And they looked a little bit more threatening going forward. I know Bruno came on and got the winner, but I thought they played quite well in that game. So I was expecting a reaction from them, a big one against Spurs. And that's exactly what we saw. I thought they were brilliant last night. They played really, really well.
David, it was a bit of a statement win, wasn't it? You know, with Man City now taking up top of the table, Liverpool left them know they're still there.
Yeah, and look, to be honest, I mean, over here, you know, I work a lot on TalkSport and in the radio, and a lot of lads were writing them off, you know, for the top four. And you think, come on, you know, I know they're going through a difficult patch, but, you know, that reaction which is very reactionary, isn't it? As soon as anything goes wrong, it's a disaster. And I guess for Liverpool, you know, it maybe was a little bit of a, you know, a difficult patch for them. But, you know, I've seen them close hand, right? I saw them against Southampton. They put 35 crosses in, you know, and it was almost as if they didn't really know what else to do, how else to break Southampton down. And I was really pleased last night for Alexander-Arnold that he got an early cross in the box, you know, got an assist. And, you know, just take a little bit of pressure off. I think he's had a little bit of stick. And I just thought they played really, really well and they looked sort of, you know, back to themselves.
Do you think the stick that Alexander-Arnold was getting was deserved, Alan?
No, not at all, Marie. And I'll tell you why, because if you look at this boy since he's come into the team, and it's kind of, if you look at the broader picture as well with Liverpool and the criticism they were receiving, they've been on the go for about two and a half seasons now, Marie, and been absolutely relentless in winning the league, winning the Champions League, getting to the final, all this kind of crack, unbeaten runs, the energy as well that they play with and the intensity. And it's been non-stop literally for two seasons. He's a young boy that's come into the team, all the talent, all the ability in the world. But at some point, especially with a young player, you're going to go through a dip in form. And I was shocked with some of the headlines, not so much the headlines, but just some of the chat and the narrative around Trent last week. I know he played one of the games and they were highlighting the stats where he gave away the ball 38 times, but he's going to go through a dip in form. He's still a young player, he's still developing, so I was delighted to see him back to his best last night, because he is an exciting talent. He's a brilliant player. I still think he probably has a little bit of work to do defensively, but going forward he's electric, and last night he was back to his very best. So I thought it was totally unjustified, the criticism, and even around Liverpool as well, Marie, because as I outlined to you last week, I would actually flip the coin on the other side and look at it from the point of view of the fact that they've lost Van Dijk and lost Joe Gomez, and yet they're still up there and still challenging. I think they deserve a lot of credit just for that. Now, people will argue, look, they've world-class players all over, and maybe the squad can cater for losing them, but I think if you take two or three of your best players out of any team, that they're going to struggle. So for Liverpool still to be where they are, with playing makeshift back fours, makeshift defences, gone through the dip in form, I still think they deserve a lot of credit.
Well, today Jurgen Klopp was asked in the press conference about signing a defender. Let's hear what he had to say.
It would be funny when you all think, oh, Liverpool is just fine with the situation, they don't care, and then they don't try. We try, but how you know, there's nothing to say until something happens, so we will see.
David, who do you think he could be in the market for?
Do you know what? I really don't know, Marie. And I think that, obviously, we've seen pictures of Van Dijk. You know, he's sort of a bit further on in his rehab. Whether they go into the market, I'm really not sure. I don't know whether they will, you know. I think that they've probably got enough. Well, what I felt they could have done, Liverpool, in the absence of their you know, a couple of injuries at the back, is I looked at what Pep did with some of their players when they had injuries, like, you know, not at the back this season, but up front, and how they've played their fullbacks inside and, you know, played with false nines, all this sort of stuff to get a result. And at times I just felt maybe Jurgen could have done something to help maybe get Alexander-Arnold, you know, not delivering as many crosses, or, you know, maybe switching his wingers over to take the sort of load off the lads at the back. But to be honest, I don't really need anyone. I would have just really liked to have seen Klopp maybe just do something different, like Pep has done, you know, and we didn't quite see it. Even last night, he's back to its, you know, usual formation of where the lads are up front. But I just think he might have to think about that moving forward, like Pep has done this season, just had injuries in the front unit, and he's, you know, come up with a master plan, and it's worked brilliantly.
Alan, would you agree? Would you look to Klopp to change up a playing style, or just open up the checkbook?
It's easy just to say open up the checkbook, Donica, but it's about getting the right person in, and you don't want to sign someone for the sake of signing them either. I felt all along that he wouldn't sign anyone, particularly when he had Matip, because he had Fabinho dropping in, and we've seen Henderson in recent weeks as well, and Henderson was brilliant last night. But the fact that Matip got injured last night, and I don't think you can rely on him, I would argue the case that maybe they should bring someone in, because I don't think you can get away with playing Henderson and Fabinho as centre-halves for the course of the season, especially coming into the business end. Plus, I think is twofold as well, because not only are you losing out when you put them centre-half, you're taking Henderson out of that midfield as well, and he's been the driving force for them. Also, Fabinho can play as that defensive shield in front of the back four like he's done in the last couple of seasons, and he's been really good. So I think you're trying to, you're nearly losing two positions when you're trying to fit Henderson and Fabinho in at the centre-half. So it'll be interesting to see, does he bring someone in? I think purely on the fact that Matip got injured last night, I think he should.
Well, Henderson, as you said, Alan, was absolutely brilliant last night. Let's hear what Klopp had to say about him.
Yeah, well, and Hendo plays there because he can do it, and because he can help us there. And you saw around the first goal, this stepping in and chipping the pass and stuff like this. That's what you want to see as well, that he's can defend on the position is clear, that he has to adapt and to learn the position a little bit is clear as well. But it's the personality we need, it's the experience we need, and it's the football we need from the position. So that's the decision. That was about the decision with Hendo.
David, speaking of personalities, it was great to see Mane back on fire again last night.
Yeah, I mean, seeing that beaming smile, and you know, he mentioned Henderson there, and you know, look, the likes of Mane, he's probably the one that, in spite of all the others, he didn't drop, you know, and played him through the middle in the cup, didn't he, against Villa? And you sort of think, the only thing I'd say is, you know, did he need to play such a strong side against Villa's youth team, when he could have maybe, you know, if he wanted Firmino to get some goals or get some confidence, play Firmino in that game, or don't play anyone, play the kids against the kids and rest up. And then I think their results would have been better. But I think Mane is proven himself, obviously, you know, he is an incredible player, isn't he? He's absolutely incredible. But do you know what? I'd like to see him on the other wing, because I think it would just create, you know, a little bit more for Firmino, because I think he gets a lot of stick, doesn't get enough goals, but you know, when the two lads cut inside, Salah and Mane, all they want to do is score. You know, they want to score. And it's hard when you're that centre-forward in there thinking, well, you know, unless I get a ball in from wide from my full-backs, where's my chance going to come from?
Alan, we've had a text in. Don't get too carried away. Spurs were awful.
They were awful, yeah, absolutely. I would agree with that, Marie. And Mourinho will point to the fact that it was three mistakes, but their general approach was dreadful, I felt, with Spurs. And we've seen that before with Mourinho. And if there was ever a time to actually make a statement or come out and take Liverpool on, considering the run of form they're in, last night was that opportunity for Spurs. But their approach was so negative and defensive, obviously playing basically five at the back with Doherty on the left and Aurier on the right, the three at the back. And once Kane went off as well, they lost all impetus or any kind of foothold that they may have had in the game. I agree with that text. I do think Spurs were awful, but still Liverpool had to go out and impose themselves on them, and I felt Liverpool done that, and that was largely down to the fact that the energy that they played with and the intensity, it was almost like a throwback to what we're used to seeing with Liverpool. So that would make me feel as though they're getting back towards where they need to be to challenge for the league.
David, just on that, Kane's injury, like, really bad timing for Spurs. No, he's going to be a massive loss.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Mourinho, he didn't look happy. I don't know if Alan or Marie, if any of you noticed that, you know, for one of the goals, Mourinho was screaming at Doherty, you know, absolutely screaming at him. And you could see Doherty's body language pointing in front of him. And, you know, I just look at Matt Doherty and I think, I just can't see it working out at Tottenham. Like, you know, they played a three, you played wing back, but he played left wing back. And he's a player, whenever I've watched him for Tottenham, you know, and obviously I want him to do well because I want him to perform well for Ireland, but I just really don't think he suits. And I don't know if Mourinho suits him as a personality either. I don't know what Alan feels, but I just worry about him at Tottenham. I just don't think he's suited there.
Alan?
I agree totally, Dave, yeah, and I saw that incident as well. And even if you look at just after Højbjerg scored the goal as well, because it was so soon after them conceding the second the Liverpool goal, you can see Mourinho on the line roaring at Doherty, Matt, almost gesturing the hands to say, come on, give us a bit more, and liven up almost. Yeah, I don't think he rates Aurier or Doherty, to be honest. I think even if you go back to the time they did the Amazon documentary, he was so complimentary of Doherty and he was mad about him, and obviously that's why he signed him. But since he's come in, I don't think he's been keen on him ever since the very first day, the opening day, when Doherty had a poor game, and he seems to have struggled ever since. Aurier, who Mourinho didn't rate last year, has actually played a lot more games than Doherty, but of course he took Aurier off last night. I don't think he's keen on either of them, to be honest.
I'm not sure how keen he is on Gareth Bale either. He was asked about him today.
I don't think Harry is a striker. I don't think he likes to play as a striker. It was something that we spoke when he joined us, and he was very objective with me by saying that He doesn't feel he's a left winger like he was before. He doesn't feel he's a number 10 like he was before too. The position that he likes to play is the position where we are playing him every minute we give him, which is the right side of the attack.
So he's not going to get in there for Kane. What do you think that Mourinho is going to do with Bale, Alan?
It's a good question, Marie. And even listening to him there, like, I don't know how influential Mourinho was in trying to get Bale back. I don't know, was it a thing that Daniel Levy done, and obviously Mourinho was landed with it. But to have a player of that quality and that calibre, there's something missing somewhere, whether it's the relationship with the manager. But I think Bale needs to look at himself as well, Marie, in terms of his own attitude and his own desire. Does he want to be kind of just drifting away now and just sitting on a bench? Like, the quality that he has, Bale was a superstar at Real Madrid. I was mad about Bale, and he was a superstar, and he still has loads of ability. Even he played in the cup game the other night. Like, you don't lose that ability. But I think it's more just his own personal kind of pride and desire and how much he really wants to make an impact again. I think a lot of it boils down to himself.
David, just from management point of view, just looking out for players, but Dele Alli, Bale, you know, Mourinho isn't short in giving them a hard time in the media.
Hey, look, I certainly think if he doesn't like, you know, he's not going to put an arm around you. Make no mistake, he's not. And the only issue, I guess, with Bale coming in would be someone like Harry Kane thinking, you know, Bale's won, what, 4 or 5 Champions Leagues, and, you know, probably Harry thinks I'm a better player than him, you know, and what have I won, or what will I win in my career? That's what I'd be thinking if, as soon as Gareth Bale comes through the door, right, how good are you? And, you know, in that sort of company that he's in, he's not in a Real Madrid team, he's in the Tottenham team, and, you know, he hasn't got into the team because, you know, let's be honest, he hasn't been good enough for them. There's no other way you can say it. I've seen times where his touch has been off, or he's done some brilliant work and he's missed a target, and he's just not the same player. And I think Harry Kane will look back on his career, if he doesn't win stuff, and go, well, I remember when Bale came in and he's won 4 Champions Leagues, and, you know, he's not... And I think that's what Jose is alluding to there, that he can't get in the team as a centre-forward because, you know, Son and Kane are better than him. And, yeah, so I think it's a difficult one for Gareth. I can't see that working out. A bit like Matt Doherty, I can't see that one working out for him at Tottenham either.
It's a difficult one for Mourinho, though, Alan, because he doesn't really have any specialist number 9 cover, and Kane is definitely going to miss the Brighton game.
No, the argument last night, Marie, was Vinicius played in obviously the cup games, and with the substitution that he made last night was he brought on Lamella, which I think was the wrong substitution. He should have gave Vinicius because it also he put Son through the middle, and it took away from Son's game because Son was actually causing a lot of trouble when you had Kane dropping in and Son playing off him. Whereas when he put Son through the middle, I felt it was far easier to defend for Liverpool, and that was the case because Lamella had no influence whatsoever on the game. I was never a fan of Mourinho taking over at Spurs, to be honest with you, Marie. And I think the jury is still very much out. You look at their approach last night, like if I was a Spurs fan looking at that, you look at the amount of points that they've dropped so far, needlessly conceding late goals against weaker teams. He's too defensive and too negative. The game last night and the approach was horrible. Now, Liverpool were very good, but like Spurs have the players to go out and take Liverpool on in a match. And this has been the argument with Mourinho, no matter where he's been. Now, obviously, the earlier years when he was successful, that's fair enough. But certainly in the latter years, I think this is the major question mark on Mourinho. And the question marks are there still for everybody to see, because that performance last night was absolutely dreadful.
So a huge game at the weekend for Manchester United against Arsenal. Now, you said you were never a fan of Mourinho taking over Spurs, but I actually can't remember whether you were a fan of Ole taking over Manchester United now. How are you feeling?
Never, ever a fan of either, Marie.
Are you on board now?
No, absolutely not. And
still
I think
not.
That's what... No, never. Look, he deserves credit for where they've gotten to in terms of the top of the league, and I don't think anybody believes that they're going to win the league. I certainly never did, but I think he takes a lot of the blame for the performance the other night against Sheffield United for two reasons. I would point the blame at him. Firstly, if you look at Man United and the position they've got themselves into at the top of the league, everybody is surprised by that, and everybody's reaction is that they're overachieving. But for them to get there, Marie, it's basically picking their best 11 players, and they've won a lot of games, fair enough. But I don't think they're still at a point different to maybe Man City or Liverpool, that they can afford to leave out four or five or six players in a match and think they're still going to win a Premier League. And for him to make the changes that he made the other night and leaving out the likes of Shaw, who's been brilliant in the games, McTominay, who gives them that energy and drive from midfield, and bringing in Matic, Martial, who gives you absolutely nothing, for him to make the changes the other night and for them to expect to just rock up and beat Sheffield United, I think the manager got it totally wrong. Then when things weren't working out from them in the game, after maybe an hour, for him to make the changes, I couldn't believe he left Martial on and took Greenwood off, and I certainly would have brought McTominay on at that stage, or even Fred, just to liven things up and give them that energy and drive from midfield, because Pogba and Matic don't have the legs to give you that, and they're never going to give you that. So I think the blame lies purely at his door, Solskjaer. He got it wrong. He probably had one eye on the game with Arsenal on the Saturday, and he probably thought, I can make the changes against Sheffield United because they're bottom of the table and we'll still win. But they got caught out. I don't think he can take any team disrespectfully like that, and they got caught out, and it's his fault.
And it's a huge test against Arsenal, David, especially their improvement going forward. You've Saka, you've Lacazette, and they're better defensively now as well.
Yeah, I mean, Murray, I was at the Southampton game, and what was interesting, this is the league game, they played them in the cup a couple of days before Arsenal, and they changed the team, and Southampton put out a full strength team prioritising the cup. They won that game, came to the league game, and they just ran out of legs, didn't have the same energy, and I thought Arsenal was superb. I thought, you know, holding at the back was brilliant. I thought especially going forward, they're a real handful. The two full-backs, Cedric, although he's a right footer, played left back, I thought he was excellent. And the two wingers, you know, just exploited Southampton's sort of full-backs, really. So there'll be a test. And, you know, even Bern Leno, who got a lot of stick last season, all the mistakes he made, he looks really assured at the minute. And so they look in a really good place, I've got to say. I think United, you know, could have the beating of them. But, you know, they've got runners in behind. They've got Lacazette linking it and holding it up. Smith Rowe looks a real talent as long as he's fit. So, you know, they're going to be a tough test for United. Make no mistake.
No, Aubameyang, though, well, it looks like he probably won't be there, Alan. But he always seems to score against Manchester United of late. But in terms of being a player in that situation, do you just get comfortable scoring against certain teams?
Yeah, well, David scored a lot more goals than I ever scored in Greece, so he'll be able to tell you about that. But on the Aubameyang thing, I wouldn't play him. As David said the other night against Southampton, they played really, really well. He's been struggling for form all season, Aubameyang. I know he has some personal issues at the moment, so that's why he's missing the games. But I certainly wouldn't change the team. I think they looked really good against Southampton the other night. The energy that Saka and Smith Rowe give them, I really like those young lads. I think they've been outstanding. I also think the presence of Thomas Partey in the midfield has added hugely to Arsenal. That's an area where they've struggled over the last number of years. And people will obviously go back to the time of Vieira and Petit, but I would even go through, even in recent seasons, they've never really had that big physical presence in midfield that he gives them. Partey, and he's been very, very good. Holding, as David said, has also played very well in recent weeks, and the fullbacks as well, and particularly if Tierney comes back into the team, he's been very, very good for them this season. So Arsenal are in a really good run of form, and I think it just outlines as well, Marie, like, you look at, obviously the debate all week has been about Lampard getting the sack, and I felt it was probably too soon and to give him time. Solskjaer's gone through his troubles and he was allowed time and he turned around. Arteta as well was on the verge of maybe possibly losing his job. He was really struggling, but you look at their form in their last six games, I think they've picked up 16 points out of 18. And how are you ever going to find out if these new managers can deal with adversity if you don't give them the chance the first time they face their first bit of adversity? So I think Arsenal deserve credit for sticking with him during that time, and they're reaping the rewards now.
Okay, well, lads, we're going to have to leave it there. There are a huge amount of games on over the weekend, and by Monday we'll probably all have different opinions on how everyone's going. But you're going to be at the Liverpool game, David. You're lucky to be going to these games.
Yeah, I really am, and you know, it's look, you've got to jump through a lot of hoops to you know, to be allowed into them, but you don't mind doing that, so it's great. No, and it's good to see a live game, you know, from above, and really appreciate it. So no, I'm lucky, and you know, we're privileged, you know.
And sure. I think that's the game of the weekend as well, David. So yeah, you're very lucky.
Yeah,
it's work though, David, isn't it? It's work.
Okay, lads, thanks.
I'll probably still do it for free.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
sure. Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you soon. We're going to take a quick break.
Game on. WFM with Green Firm. Green Firm's new on-the-go chicken bites are natural, high in protein, and packed with flavour.
Game on 2FM.
Okay, we go through Six Nations, but there's plenty of Irish action this weekend with Munster taking on Benetton and Leinster away to the Scarlets. We're joined by World Cup winner BJ Botha. BJ, how are you?
Done as all well, man. Hi, Marie. How's it going?
Hey. We're good. BJ, just before we get on to rugby, how are you managing the homeschooling?
I'll tell you what. I'd rather be on the field playing 80 minutes. let me tell you something. Yeah, no, it's... It is testing, I won't lie to you, but finding a way like everyone else, sure, everyone's in the same boat, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, jeepers, it's testing the years gone by, things that you've forgotten, and learning new things every day, so no, but it's all good.
Fridays are great, though, because we just get pee.
Fridays are great.
It's
yeah,
Fridays
are exactly. Great.
And a Zoom call with your friends. It's amazing.
Exactly.
Zumba, is that what it is today? BJ,
exactly.
Actually, speaking about Moon Tours and teacher Paul O'Connell going into the Irish fold, look, you've worked with the best, you've worked with Paulie, but you've also worked with Victor Matfield. Do you know what excellent is in that area? How do you think he's going to add to this Irish setup?
Yeah, I think I said it. I don't know why he's not being there sooner. You know, I think it's probably part of, a massive part of Paul's DNA, I think, you know, to kind of... coach, and I think he's got so much to add. He's got the respect first and foremost as a player and as a coach now over the last couple of years. He's coached numerous teams, and I think he's in the right place. I think he's going to add massive value in the areas we expect, obviously the line out, you know, the kind of open play, kickoffs, massive part of the game where I think a lot of teams kind of underperform. And I think you'll add that experience side of things where players will kind of just tap on him for any info they need. I think he's going to be a massive asset, you know, and it's just good to see him there.
BJ, because it has been a problem area, it's an area of frustration even for me, and whatever about the provinces, because they work different systems. But if we look back at the Autumn Nations Cup against the English match, it was really, really poor. And the way rugby's gone, if you haven't got a line out and a scrum, you can't launch.
Yeah, there's no doubt, and I think Donners, you'll definitely look to make that process a lot simpler, because we know when we're under that pressure and we got a 5 meter liner to take, or we kind of on the 5 meter attacking, we need to convert. You know, we see teams now, the teams that are coming out to the top are the teams that convert at the right time. You know, that pressure converting it into points, and we know that Ireland is capable of that, but at the right times, we've seen in the past games they haven't converted them.
Yeah. Okay, looking ahead to it, I was thinking of you today when I saw Tadhg Furlong is to start his game. I know everyone's saying in a year, but for us it's kind of mid-season. But coming straight back in, BJ, to such big rugby, coming into, you know, they take on the Scarlets this weekend, do you think he is enough road to be prepared to be involved for Wales next week?
Yeah, I think he only knows that, and the guys that have been working with him, they're Donners, I think they'll have enough confidence in him. I don't think they'll risk him. I think obviously we've seen now, and as we kind of allude to later, the amount of obviously players they have at their disposal with Ireland, especially in tight head. You know, I think he's. It would be the same for me. In one part, would like to start the game and basically maybe come off after a good stint and get some time under the belt. You know, I think it'd be a similar stress if he does come off the bench, especially up front. I think nothing much changes there really, you know. I think so. I think he'll have the confidence from the medical staff, and I'm sure he'll back himself there.
BJ, in Munster, Roman Salanoa is making his first Pro 14 start on Saturday. How exciting a prospect is he?
Yeah, I suppose we'll have to see with that. I think they've rotated a few props months of the season, and we'll see now with him having his first start. I think they'll definitely going to look to add to their depth they have there already, and especially with the internationals away, they're going to require that, and I think they're going to have to really steer the ship for them while during this time, especially with COVID, especially with the bubble that I suppose the Irish camp will have. I think they're going to rely more and more on these players, and I'm sure he'll put his hand up.
Now, speaking of props, it was really interesting to hear Bernard Jackman just been a little bit critical about Andy Farrell's decision making. What are your thoughts on it, just from the squad selection point of view?
Yeah, the squad selection, I suppose it's a funny one. You know, I think it's been such an erratic season. I think up and downs and players playing and not playing. I think some teams, some fixtures being called off. I think it's got. I think they definitely warrant their, you know, query on the squad, I think. But I suppose he's got his own way of doing things, and I think we should look at backing there. And I think specifically in the front row perspective, you know, he's obviously gone with some new selections and obviously players that haven't played much. But I think, you know, we need to test them on that level. I think it's a plan in process, and we need to see what they're doing on that stage.
So Bernard Jackman said that the prop selection makes no sense. Tom O'Toole is a player for the future, but if he had to start a tight end in a game against Wales, that we'd be worried. What do you think of those comments?
Yeah, I think Tom O'Toole is definitely one for the future, but I think, you know, who's to say that he couldn't come off the bench, I suppose, with a player like Herring, who he's played with at Ulster, you know, that connection. I think they should be looking at to obviously, you know, base him around more senior players. I look at it like that and give him an opportunity. I think why wait now and see maybe down the line when with that opportunity. I think he's done enough for me in the fixtures that led up to that. He did have that injury in September, but I think he's come over that now, and he's a big enough unit. I suppose we see last season now, this past season now, Andrew Porter really thankfully, you know, played almost every game and stood through that. And I think if we had one injury there with Tighe not available and Finley Beelam obviously, you know, coming, we were a little bit short there. So I think we hope to kind of back them up, and hopefully there are no injuries, and I think they'll probably deal with it as they come.
I think he could be rewarded, like you said there, for the likes of the performances of the guys like Andrew Porter, because not only can he play every week, but he can do 80 minutes if you needed to do it, BJ. And I think that allows you blood a young player in the squad then.
Yeah, and I always like the fact that you can kind of, you know, stack your kind of tight head side. I think we've seen now with, I suppose, Tigers also coming out, as we've spoken now, he's playing his first game back now. And, you know, again, it's about the combinations. You know, it's about the combination. I'm sure we'll see, you know, him surrounded by guys he knows. As I said, even a Kelle will know exactly his experience up there, you know, and bring them across. I think, you know, we've had situations where we've had a possible, in no respect with Beelam, but he can play loose and tight, you know. I really like the specialist side of a specialist tight end being on the bench, you know. I think it adds a massive amount. I think Porter then can always, you know, look at if he needs to be move across to loose head rather than the other way around. You know, you'd always want to stack your tight end side more so.
You've been around for quite a while now, just around the rugby scene in Ireland. How would you rate the prop situation right now? Like, what's the depth like?
Yeah, we'd always like more depth, I think, you know. But I suppose we see with the provinces, you know, injuries obviously played its toll. I suppose we see Killer coming now into the fold after, you know, not playing much, and I think he's been rewarded on obviously what he can do, and I suppose they'll definitely back him to do that again and as he builds again. But I think we'd like more from a tight end perspective. I suppose it shows quite clearly how short we were last season with Porter really starting most of the games, you know, and really I think everyone knows how he was performing, and I think we needed that kind of backup there, but we didn't have it. So I think on a tight end perspective, we definitely have to look at that depth. We'd like more of them, but I think worldwide shortage, I think, in the rugby world. But I think slowly but surely, hopefully, we speak about props now in months, that we speak about the props coming through the younger age groups. I think time is the biggest thing. And I think a player like Tom O'Toole now, hopefully, you know, would see that they'll hope he'll take that next step and rise now on the international scene.
And Munster going out this weekend, and it is a prop that's of interest, Josh Witcherly. We saw him in Claremont, BJ, and first scrum didn't go his way, but, you know, whatever about getting his technique right, the mental ability to get back in the game after an incident like that, you know, you've been there, you've done that to props in your time. What did that show of him?
Yeah, no, that Charles showed massive fortitude first and foremost, Donners, and I think, you know, with scrummaging, as we know, how massive confidence is really, and as you are thinking about your last scrum's performance, if it was a poor one, just waiting for that next scrum to put it right, you know. So, you know, I think especially as a young prop in a big game like it was, you know, just showed massive mental strength there, and I suppose I'm a big fan of his technical ability up front, and I think I've said before, you know, he's definitely one there, you know, going forward, that I think he's gonna definitely, I suppose, make that jersey himself for a long time.
That's high praise. BJ, we're always chatting about the Lions, just with everything that's going on. Maybe you could give us your take on it and what you're hearing from at home, because Razzy was really interesting the other week that, you know, he said if they have to tour, if they have to get on the road, they'll do that, which I was kind of taken back. But, of course, we want a Lions tour to go ahead and everyone to be safe. But what's the sentiment in South Africa?
Yeah, of course. South Africa is obviously, as you see in the news, you know, COVID is been quite rampant, but you know, speaking back at home now, the numbers are going down. I suppose from a COVID perspective, you know, we obviously speaking to the people in South Africa, the vaccine does seem to be coming in much later, you know, as that hopes, and I suppose that does will affect now in some part, I suppose, decisions going forward and decisions being made about the Lions tour. So it's not looking great at the moment, I won't lie, but I would say that, you know, from a safety perspective, as you said, first and foremost, but I would say from a Lions touring perspective, I would be surprised if they would play abroad and not in South Africa at a time that suited. But then it's the tricky part of such a rugby filled year, you know, where do you move it to? So I think, you know, and I think I look back at the 97 Lions, you know, and I suppose Ian McGeachan said there, a lion in South Africa is special, you know, and I think it would be a big shame from a Lions tour perspective and what the tour can do, but you know, we're in a different place now, and obviously COVID determines a lot what happens, so it'll be interesting. I just think that it won't have the same kind of power and, I suppose, impetus that it would if it was played outside of South Africa, you know, just it feels so strange.
PJ, I was lucky enough to tour in 2009 and to South Africa, and just the way the Lions are received in South Africa, it is a massive thing for a touring party to go there.
It is, and I mean, I'm even speaking to the guys in the provinces, you know, just take the provinces for instance, you know, these guys play and they're hopefully fit and just wanting to make that side, you know, Sharks, my old side in South Africa, wanting to play against the Lions. It's probably one of their guys that won't play international, but it would be the biggest game of their lives, you know, and timing that well, you know, is huge because of the timeline involved and expecting the Lions, you know, to come in and touring. It's just huge all around, and kind of having the Lions and even the locals, I suppose, in the younger age groups, you know, and I've seen this in the past, obviously, what the Lions do for the local game, you know, in the communities and how they come out in the communities. It's all part of it, and that's part of the Lions tour. So that's a real special part of the tour. And yeah, so as I said, I just hope it does go ahead in some capacity, obviously in a safe way, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. BJ, I was looking through the squads today and loads of Irish players involved, loads of young talent coming through. But then I looked at the bench and saw Scott Vardy and Damien De Allende. And it just made me think, sometimes we get players in from overseas and we chat about the player welfare, but the overseas players can be put out week in, week out, or at least asked to step up every now ahead, you know, more often than we're probably used to with our national players.
Yeah, they have to. I suppose they've been brought in for a reason. Donners, I think the guys have been brought in and I suppose have come to play rugby in one part they want to play. And I think the guys, especially the guys you're talking about there, have put up their hand, you know, and I suppose they themselves would be brought in and put pressure on themselves to perform, you know. So I think it's a big part of them where they can put their words into action is the field. So I think they wouldn't want it any other way. But I do think it's part of that the time they've come to put in, yeah, is on the field, you know. So I suppose it is a balance at times. I suppose you can't be playing them 80 minutes every game, but I think they'll be playing a large chunk, and especially again with the international window coming up now, you know, these guys can't just be brought in for that. I think it's really good that they get that continuation throughout the season.
It's a really nervous time for players at the moment, contract negotiations for so many, and we're hearing rumours of different agents, Bernard Jackman again helping out with saying that BJ could be off to France. CJ.
I've already been and come back.
You've been there a few times. I hope you're not.
Do you know what's going to happen now? There's going to be a rumour, and Donald Allen said that BJ was heading off to France, and that'll be the
good news.
The
good news. I'm coming out of retirement.
I promise he could still do a job for you. He get a 2-for-1 deal. But like all Munster supporters, he's the last person you want to see leave.
Yeah, of course. I mean, there's, you know, like any time during the season, and I suppose coming to the latter part now, it has been an up and down season, as you we've seen. You know, contracts haven't been renewed as of yet. You know, COVID is obviously, some contracts have been kind of you know, kind of, I suppose, one part you know, percentage has been taken off. And look, the talk is there always around this time, you know. But you know, CJ's a big player. He's been a big player. He's a real monster man, as we've seen. You know, he's thrown himself in there from minute one when he stepped on the field for Munster, and then he made his Irish debut, you know, and the time he's put in, I think he's been here 9+ years, you know. So I think he's always going to, you know, he's put everything on the line for his adopted country and Munster. So the talk is, I think at this stage, just talk, you know. But I suppose CJ's been the standout eight for me over the past couple of seasons, even before that previously. And it's just been, the biggest thing about CJ's been so consistent, you know. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that time and time again, how he can change a game. So, look, at this stage, speculation. But, I mean, who knows during this time? I suppose COVID is really throwing the span in the works. And I think he'll make for sure the best decision for himself and his family first and foremost. And then go from there. But as I said before, I think there'll be a massive, you know, a kind of part of that he's so enthralled in Munster and in Ireland. And so we'd have to just see how this plays out.
Tonica, just on a broader point, because we are in this situation where finances are going to be extremely stretched by the RFU, and they're probably not going to be able to retain all the players that they would want to, which would take the financial burden off them for sure. But it might put them in a situation where, by releasing the players and allowing them to go somewhere else, that they might have to change their rules.
Yeah, I don't like it, Marie, personally. Like, if you look at Tadhg Furlong this week, coming back after so much time off, Tadhg Furlong is coming back 100% ready to play rugby. I just know it from playing, and BJ, you've played in other countries and in other leagues. It's not like that in other places. They get you out on the pitch. You're an asset. Put them out on the pitch. And look, we've seen it before. But Johnny, BJ, I don't know, have you any experience in it?
Yeah, we've just spoken about it now with Damien Dallinger and these guys playing in Munster, you know, and I suppose in Ireland, and then playing for the Springboks, you know. It's the other way, it's the same, but the other way around. You know, these guys are trying to get every kind of penny, you know, that they've invested in the player for their club side, and rightly so. And look, I think you always have that, you know, view of players being in Ireland, and especially the pathway to be looked after as an international player. You know, as you say now with Tadhg Furlong, he's ticked off every step, you know, along the way to be taking that field ready and having the confidence to play. You never want to be exposed in that area. And the time and the amount of games they do play in countries like France, you know, it's difficult to expect that player then to turn out week in, week out for a Six Nations game. There are the teams that can do it. I mean, there are the players that can do it. There's no doubt. But they need to be managed in a way. And I think that's difficult when you have kind of an international side asking for a club to rest the player, you know, going into a big game. I think it's a big ask, you know, and it becomes very tricky, as Donna says.
Absolutely. BJ, thank you so much for joining us. We wish you luck uploading your work to Seesaw over the next few weeks. And thanks for joining us. And we'll catch you soon. And we're back after this break chatting.
Game on
Two FM.
Game on Two FM
with Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm on-the-go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein.
Game on Two FM.
Okay, welcome back, and we're delighted to be joined by our teammate Jane Mangan. Jane, how are you?
I'm very good, and I'm raring to go for some racing this weekend.
Well, I'm glad you are, but weather is seeming to be a bit of a problem, Jane. What's the news? What's on and what's off?
Yeah, well, it's not your typical January. There's a lot of water, and Cheltenham has succumbed to that. The track was inspected today ahead of its trials meeting tomorrow, and that is off due to waterlogging. And Fairy House passed an inspection today at 3 o'clock, but has to pass another one at 7:30 tomorrow morning if we are to have action from there, because I think there's around 27 mils due overnight, and that will push them to the pin of their collar.
You're covering that for Racing TV. Will you get a text message before you leave, or could you be halfway up the road?
I might be left, but I won't be gone far. To be fair, 7:30 is as early as they could probably hold it before it probably gets bright. And look, we'll have an indication overnight. But look, if it does go ahead, I think the Mayor's Hurdle is very interesting there. It's a Grade 3, and it's been won by great mares in the past. Just the last 2 years, Manila Melody and Honeysuckle have won this race for Penny Alexander, who has two runners in this year's event, including Brave Way for the winning combination of Henry Bromhead and Rachel Blackmore. But I think they will be all out to try and make it a hat-trick of wins. because Royal Cahala for Peter Fahey has won three times at the track, loves Fairy House, was a very good winner there, but conditioned third last time. And on that running has the measure of Del Vino, who reopposes and beat Hook Up that day, who's quite a smart filly with Foley Mullins as well. So Castivatira, Mighty Blue, Del Vino, they'll all have to improve markedly, I think, to catch Royal Cahala if the racing goes ahead at Fairy House tomorrow.
And what about Nace on Sunday?
Nace will be tough going too, Marie. I know at this stage of the year, no, there's no surprises, and everybody will be aware how attrition it'll be. I think the Nace Racecourse Business Club Novice Chase, the Grade 3 Novice Chase, is the feature for me there. It's a 3 mile one race for novices, and obviously Pencil Full of Lead is top of the market. He was second to Colour Evie in a Grade 1 at Christmas at Limerick. That form has been franked by the mare, winning impressively at Thurles during the week. And if you look back at his other runs, he beat Latest Exhibition in the Florida Pearl at Punchestown, and he beat a certain Cocoa Beach in his Beginner's Chase at Galway in October as well. That's reading pretty well after the tie-up days yesterday at Gorn Park.
Jen, when you're looking at it, and especially in Ace, are you looking for a champion hurdler hidden in the pack?
Well, you're always looking for a good one, and you're always looking for some bit of value. And I think the Limestone Lad heard at 1:15 on Sunday. That threw up a horse 2 years ago called Espoir de Lenne, and little did we know that that horse, as a five-year-old, would go on to win the champion hurdle at Cheltenham. Unsure if we have a champion hurdle candidate in there this year. If we do, it's potentially Beacon Edge for Noel Mead and Jigginstown. He was third behind Honeysuckle in the Hatton's Grace last time. That was over 2.5. This is back to 2 miles. He has a certain Bacchuson and Curse of Lime to beat. Bacchuson is a serial winner. He's at the wing 13 races in his career so far. But Beacon Edge is the younger horse. He's a 7-year-old, and he's £6 superior in the ratings. So I think Beacon Edge, this might be his way to get back on track.
OK, Jane, stay with us, because we are joined now by Leon Blanche for our Punters Council. And today's punter is Donica. Donica, what is the charity?
We're going to play for Alex Popham. Alex Popham was on with us on Wednesday, and his charity is called Head for Change. Obviously, he is suffering from early onset dementia. And Leon, we think it would be a brilliant charity to represent and play for. So we're going to go with that. How are you, Leon?
I'm doing great, Donners, and a fantastic charity, so let's try and get at least a winner.
Okay,
and,
so here,
help out in some small way.
Here are our bets, Leon. A treble from Alan Cawley, Everton, Fulham and Liverpool to win.
Yeah, look, Everton at home to Newcastle, Fulham against West Brom, Liverpool away to West Ham. It's 5.5 to 1. I'm going to push it all the way out to 10 to 1 for Alan's treble.
And Jane, what have you got for us?
I have Royal Cahala and Fairy House, provided it goes ahead. But Leon, if that does not happen, we push the price on to Shishkin at Doncaster.
Well, if it does happen, Jane, it's a 2-to-1 chance, 3-time course winner. You can have 5-to-1 about that winning, and we look after it. We'll roll something on to Shishkin for you, should Fairy House not go ahead.
Right, we're going to have to keep Jane on now all the time, because exactly, she pushes things out. So what's your Boyle Sports booster then, Leon?
I'm keeping it simple this week. Yeah, hopefully with football, two of the selections are the same as Alan, Everton and Fulham, and I think Leicester at home to Leeds is a little bit easier than Liverpool away to West Ham. So the Boyle Sports boost is 11-2. Once again, I'm going to give it 10-1 for the Boyle Sports boost.
Brilliant. We know it's such an important charity, Head for Change. We'd like to look out for Alex Popham, so I'm going to do the right thing and back Jane Mangan, which is always the proper way to go.